Hi, this is Bill Lindeke with the Streets.mn podcast, conversations about transportation, public space, and urban design in Minnesota. The podcast this week is a conversation with Chris Ferguson, a University Avenue business owner who is leading the charge on re-adding on-street parking to University as it runs through St. Paul and Minneapolis. As you probably know, University Avenue is home to the Green Line Light Rail, the Twin Cities' most recent and most successful transit project. When they built the train, the planners removed the vast majority of the on-street parking, which has made it more difficult for some small businesses that don't have their own separate parking lots. Iverson and his group, Parking Possibilities MSP, is doing a study and a survey, which is live right now, aimed at putting parking back on the street in places and narrowing the road to a smaller configuration. We sat down this week at the Cupcake Cafe in Prospect Park to talk about his project. Before I play the tape, though, please consider joining Streets.mn as a member. At Streets.mn, we bring you in-depth information and perspectives you just won't find anywhere else, and I mean really in-depth, about transportation policy, urban design, and lots of other topics. It'd be great if you could help out with some of the costs of producing both this podcast and our website, which has hosting fees and just like anything else. You can go to streets.mn on our website's front page. And there's a big blue join button. You just click it, and we will thank you later. So thanks for listening, and thanks for your support, and I hope you enjoy the podcast. Okay, welcome to the podcast. I'm here with Chris Ferguson at the Cupcake Cafe. On University Avenue, just over the St. Paul Minneapolis border. Like, the border is right behind us, by the way. It's like literally a block away.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, Chris, what you're working on this project about University Avenue and parking. Can you just explain that a little bit?
Yeah, we're analyzing the traffic capacity in University Avenue and seeing if there's any areas where it's possible to bring parking back to University Avenue to both help businesses, you know, help make it a little safer place to walk and bike, and make it more of a place where people would like to come to and be easier to move around on.
So let's just fill in some of the history of this for folks. Like, so the light rail was built, it opened this year.
Yep.
And when they constructed it, what did the street used to look like?
The street, depending on where you were, the street had one lane of parking and two travel lanes.
Yeah, it was really wide.
Right? Very wide, yep.
Yeah, and then two travel lanes and then turn lanes and
correct.
Kind of a lot of cars. But I used to bike down University Avenue all the time.
Right.
And because it was really wide, there's a lot of space. People would give you a lot of room.
Oh.
But it's also really easy to park. And I remember when they were contemplating the light rail, they did kind of they counted the number of spaces on the street, and then they did a survey, I think, of how many of them were used very much.
Right.
And the argument of the planners at the time was that, you know, 80% of the spots are vacant most of the time. Do you remember that conversation?
You know, I wasn't part of that conversation originally, but I think it really depends on what part of the corridor you're in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too. I think there are certain spots where parking was used a lot, and other spots where it was almost never used. So.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, the hope is to fill in a lot of the vacant lots too, right? So there's a number of lots that are being used for parking today that obviously would generate a lot more tax revenue and have a lot more useful purpose if they were, buildings that house jobs or residences up and down the corridor, as opposed to being vacant lots that are surface parking lots or fenced up lots that are not being used in a maximum purpose kind of way.
Yeah. So what are the traffic counts on the street now post light rail?
Yeah, we don't have the final numbers yet. So the initial counts that were done after the construction, but before the train was running, you know, the counts were down 25% to 40% depending on where you were on the corridor. We just did counts a few weeks ago, and we'll have those numbers available as part of this report, hopefully by the end of December, but if not, you know, sometime in early January.
Do you have kind of rough guesses about traffic counts so far?
You know, I don't have the numbers.
What report are you referring to?
So we're going to generate a report where we're going to look at, we've hired a traffic engineering firm that will look at traffic counts, will look at movement at every intersection, about 15 different intersections. So look at how many cars are turning, how many buses are going through, how many trucks, how many emergency vehicles, all sorts of different uses, bikes, pedestrians, et cetera. So we'll look at how traffic is flowing around different intersections and then analyze whether or not it's possible in certain areas to take away one of the travel lanes to bring parking back.
That seems like a, kind of a leap for a lot of planning that went into this. It's like, oh, we need traffic flow is going to be, just if you'd suggested at the time, I know some people did, that they should only have one lane in each direction plus a turn lane. A lot of folks get real nervous about that, right?
Well, the base assumption in any kind of traffic modeling when you go into a project is that you're going to maintain all your traffic and then you're going to grow it. So we know, we knew anyways, after the construction, there was a significant drop in traffic. So that would not have been what was in the original model, because they were not modeling a drop in traffic. In fact, they'd be modeling a, you know, a sort of normal, slow level of increase of traffic. Not only in this corridor, but around the country, we know there's a decline in vehicle miles driven. And obviously, you know, I think the thought would be is when you're in a transit corridor like University Avenue that, you know, you might accelerate that drop in vehicle miles driven. That's what we're trying to figure out. We might, you know, we might look at this and find out that there really isn't a drop in traffic and that you need two lanes to make sure that the traffic can flow well through different parts. What we may also find is you need two lanes at intersections, but in between intersections or in less busy portions of the corridor, you don't need two lanes and you can put some spots back. I wouldn't expect to see spots up and down the corridor on every block and you know, and all the way up to every light intersection. I think that's not going to happen. I think it's more likely there'll be certain pockets where traffic would justify having some spots. And I think you'll likely see, if there are any areas where that makes sense, those spots will not go all the way up to the light. You're still going to have right and left turn lanes at every intersection. You're going to allow free traffic movement. So, you know, it's not going to be a, you know, like University Avenue used to be where you had, you know, parking from end to end on every block. That's not a scenario that is likely going to be possible under, current conditions. So.
What kind of conversations have you had with people on the street, like business owners and stuff?
You know, we started that conversation. We've had the survey has been live now for a week and a half or so. We've had over 700 responses so far, which actually I think is probably pretty good.
Can you describe the survey for me?
The survey really asks businesses and residents and people that use the corridor what they think about a change. And, you know, they ask people to a number of different questions. But really, we try to get at is that you can't have both, right? You can't have parking and two lanes of traffic. So we tried to make it so that we really asked people to figure out what mattered more to them. Obviously, there's a lot of other impacts of both, right? I mean, if there's impacts on both on the community as well as on the surrounding streets, depending on which choice you make. So I haven't looked at all the responses yet. We'll wait until the survey closes and start analyzing the data. But I think having, you know, a large number of responses is great, right? We want to get as much feedback as possible. We want to get as many people having their voice heard, and we'll see where the balance of the people lie. And, you know, I think if you had 50 people respond, that's, you know, doesn't tell you very much. 700 people is a pretty good number for a corridor of this size, and I suspect we'll likely see, you know, that number build because we still have 2 weeks left for people to respond to the survey.
So, Chris, how did you get involved in this this effort? Are you, like, you live or work around University Avenue? I'm just curious because you're kind of like the only guy doing this, it seems like to me. You're just...
We own a business on the corridor in Stadium Village, so an area where we already have... We used to have one lane of traffic and one lane of parking. You know, what's interesting is Washington Avenue, where we were going through the University of Minnesota campus, used to have as many cars a day as University Avenue has. And we were able to have one lane of parking, one lane of traffic in non-rush hour periods. We had two lanes of traffic during rush hour. We had a fire hall right next to us. We had lots and lots of buses going through campus. Obviously, many of those buses now have been replaced by the light rail, but there's still a lot of buses going through the area. So, you know, we had an environment which is not that dissimilar to University Avenue, and it worked really well. It worked great for the businesses in the area. I think for people that were walking in the area that were wanting to come to campus to visit, whether they were visiting a business or going to Northrop or going to register for class or anything else, it made it easy if they wanted to pop in for 15 minutes. They didn't have to go park at a ramp and try to figure out how to get in a ramp. So I think people from out of town in particular you know, a lot of times finding where to go is challenging. They Google the address, they get there, and when there's no parking, you know, it's difficult for them to figure out, you know, where to go. So I got started leading a group called the Business Resources Collaborative, which our focus was to help businesses prepare, survive, and thrive the light rail construction. So want to help them prepare pre-construction, survive the construction, and then now hopefully thrive post-construction. We have developed a strategy to look at creating 14,000 new living wage jobs from Campo to campus, and this is part of it. We really want to create an area where people want to come to, residents want to be, walk, bike, you know, we'd love to bring our kids, and we want to have a place where businesses want to come and create jobs, not just service-based jobs, but jobs that pay a living wage and encourage those businesses to hire people from the neighborhoods around. And so it really, I think, is important to think about what kind of community is possible along University Avenue. You know, when Washington Avenue is now a dead-end road. So if you could imagine University and Snelling having a dead end at University and Snelling, and all the cars that turn left or right, and what an impact that has. We have that, and, you know, it's interesting. There's definitely fewer cars.
In Stadium Village, you mean?
In Stadium Village.
Yeah, it's actually changed so much, the feel of the street. When I first started going to the U, it was about 7 years ago, 6 years ago, and just I remember so many close calls riding my bike down Washington Avenue. Just it was, like you said, there's no parking during the rush hours, and that road would be full of cars all the time. It just felt kind of exhausting to be on Washington, right, back in that era. I don't know. You probably remember. You probably spent a lot of time there. But now, mm-hmm, it's just very relaxing. It's a relaxing street, and there's a ton. You know, most people in that area are kind of coming on foot anyway, just because you have so many students and so many people living in that,
right,
in the area. It's nuts to try to park on Washington Avenue, but I don't think any of the businesses are going out of business. There's new ones all the time because they've kind of changed the culture and the feel of the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you could debate about whether the new stuff is kind of chain story. I'm thinking of like the convenience store on the corner used to be the Harvard, mm-hmm, what was it called, Harvard Co-op or whatever, and now it's CVS, and you know, mm-hmm, that's kind of one of the impacts too of some of the changes.
Right. Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's difficult when you look at, you know, rising rents and some of the other, you know, factors that exist, and that's, you know, that's part of it. That, you know, for businesses, you know, your hope, your revenues rise faster than your rent, or else it's usually not a good equation for success in the business. And you know, an area where in Stadium Village, we have 7,000 people a day getting on and off the train. The other areas don't have that foot traffic, and so they haven't had the same level of benefit from a foot traffic perspective, and yet they've lost their parking. So, you know, if you trade out parking for a large volume of people walking, that works for retail. But, you know, when you want to create an environment, you know, be it downtown Minneapolis, downtown St. Paul, you look at Grand Avenue, there's a lot of areas where you make areas more walkable and the more people want to be there. And I think, you know, you want that street level retail, and then you want, you know, good paying jobs and businesses that are above that street level retail. And, you know, I think it's a potential recipe for success. It's just a question of what is possible for this corridor and what people's vision are. And that's really what we're asking is, what do people want to see? You know, what will work? You know, the other side of it is there are a lot of industrial businesses up and down this corridor. We have to continue to support those businesses. They're critical to the infrastructure.
Like Rock 10 plant is the kind of thing you
mean? You know, Rock 10, but there's breweries, you know, in and around Raymond area. There are a number of businesses that are, you know, either industrial, light industrial, but have trucks that are taking goods from the companies, you know, light manufacturing businesses, companies that do assembly. You know, those companies need the ability to get their trucks in and out of those businesses and be able to get their goods to market. And those jobs are critical to the community as well, as is that tax base. So, you know, it really is a balance of all of the various uses of the corridor. And that's why, you know, as we look at it, it really isn't going to be a one-size-fits-all. And, you know, what's interesting is, you know, it doesn't have to be parking all day, every day. It could be parking in evenings and weekends. It could be parking, you know, non-rush hour. It could be parking at different points in the day where some of the other uses aren't at their peak. And when, you know, there's a lot of trucks or there's a lot of cars flowing through the area in rush hour periods, then, you know, maybe you don't have parking. And so I think the idea is to be flexible in sort of the thought and figure out how do we maximize the use of University Avenue? How do we maximize the use of the Green Line and bring as many jobs and as many new development dollars to St. Paul and to this part of Minneapolis as we can?
Wow. I kind of want to take the opportunity to ask you, because you're a business owner, and I have a lot of conversations with business owners who are kind of skeptical about people are often really frustrated by parking. That's like, if you run a business or a cafe or whatever, the number one complaint you probably get from people walking in your door is, oh, it was hard to park, especially if it's in an urban area. And there's a million examples I can think of. So that's a difficult problem, I think, for a lot of people, for city planners. What do you do about that, right? The answer often is, we got to find more parking. We got to tear down the building next to me and put in a big parking lot or whatever. Anyway, I try to convince people that that's not necessarily the only kind of solution. And that kind of solution, pave St. Paul, isn't really good in the long run for the city, for increasing walking and getting the kind of pedestrian traffic that you see in City and Village or whatever. But I have a real hard time telling people what maybe one thing you should think about is putting meters in front of your place or charging a little more on the street or in downtown St. Paul. Maybe we should have the parking meters run past 5 o'clock and maybe see that space in front of your business turn over 3 or 4 times instead of just sitting there with only one car in it the whole time you're trying to serve dinner or whatever it is. Anyway, I don't get very far talking to business owners about this, and I'm curious if you had any advice for me or someone like me that's really interested in parking and in solving the parking problem. What kind of messages how can I connect with business owners who are frustrated about parking?
You know, everybody needs parking for customers to come in, right? As much as we want our businesses to be supported by pedestrian traffic and transit traffic, most businesses are not, unless you're in a skyway or some kind of environment like that, are not in an environment where we can solely rely on pedestrians and people that are, biking, walking, and taking transit to our businesses. We're not Manhattan, right? And I used to live there, and in that environment, most people didn't own a car, but you still had street parking, which is interesting, right? So, in a city that had as great a transportation network as Manhattan has, a lot of the streets there was still street parking, right?
So, highly coveted too.
Highly coveted, right? There's TV shows about it. So, I think, from our perspective in Stadium Village, we worked with the city to have the meters extended to 10 o'clock now. We did not want to have free parking on Sundays, things like that. That, again, the idea is the meters should be for customers and not necessarily for people that are wanting to park and go to a game, park and go to work, but really for customers and people that are wanting to come and visit the area and shop and spend money and whether they're going to a doctor's appointment or they're going to get a cup of coffee or they're going to visit, that's what those spots should be for. And so having metered spots makes the most sense for something like that. You can play with pricing as to what you want to do from getting turnover, but having some level of metered or monitored spaces, I think, makes the most sense. As I say, in Stadium Village, we've worked with the city to get more metered spots and less free spots because we wanted people to come use the spaces while they're in restaurants. We didn't want people to come and park all day and go to class.
Right.
And we just felt that wasn't a good use of a very, very limited resource. And so if you have more of those spaces turning over, you probably need less of them. And I think that's what, when we look at University Avenue, you look at the total number of spaces that were eliminated, we're not going to bring all those spaces back. But maybe you bring back 25, 30, 40%, some reduced number that was that number that was high, that were highly used in the previous period. There are certain spots where there are pockets of parking now. There are some spots that are still available. And you really want to look at where the spots are needed and where traffic uses of the road can justify those spots and justify those needs. And the other part is we're really not looking at making any kind of changes to the curb and gutter line. So it really is a addition of meters, signs, painting the roads differently. So if we find there's certain areas that, as things develop, either don't need parking or that have significant traffic problems, then you know the engineers can go back and look at that and make a choice and change that back or move the spaces further away from the lights so that you have proper turning radiuses and other things that you need to make the intersections function properly. So, and that was part of the reason why they didn't put a one-lane road in during construction of the light rail is if you made it and designed it as a one-lane road with cutouts for parking, then if you needed both lanes, you couldn't go back easily and do that because you'd have to be jackhammering out curb and gutter and repaving roads, which isn't cost effective. So that's really why when the original design was done, the decision was made to put two lanes in with the ability to look at it again and see where there, if and where there might be some spots where parking was possible.
Well, that's great. Cool. Well, so you said this study is going on right now and it'll be done in December or January?
Correct.
And the survey is going on right now and it's live on your website
live.
Or something?
Yep, parkingpossibilitiesmsp.com. It's available till it'll be available till September 16th. And so we encourage as many people as possible
to fill it out.
November 16th.
Okay.
Yep. Encourage as many people as possible to go on and online and fill it out, both business owners, residents, people that are coming and using the area as customers or as employees. So.
What's your vision for University Avenue in 5 years then?
Yeah, my vision for University Avenue in 5 years would be a vibrant corridor with 4,000 or 5,000 new living wage jobs. Hopefully half of them are filled by people that live up and down the corridor in some of the communities of, in particular some of the communities of color that have had different, more difficult periods of time since even all the way since 94 was put through and broke up the Rondo community. So I think an opportunity corridor where people can work, live, and enjoy St. Paul and enjoy this part of Minneapolis is really what we'd love to see on University Avenue.
Cool. Thanks for talking to me, Chris.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. That's awesome. I'm really inspired by this. Thanks for listening to this conversation with Chris Ferguson and for listening to the podcast in general. Again, please consider donating to streets.mn if you appreciate this podcast and would like to see it improved or if you like our website and want it to keep going. I've got some good stuff coming up over the next few weeks, a conversation with Joe Scott and a conversation with Alex Cicchini and some other stuff in the works. So thanks for listening and so long from Prospect Park.